lift people and encourage people. And last week, we established that, by all accounts, Jesus was unbelievably good to people. And that was one of his hallmarks. He was full of grace and full of truth and full of only good things. He only did good things. No one could call him out on any bad deed. No one could do any such thing. But what we established last week was that though Jesus was gracious, he was not harmless. Jesus was not another harmless, nice guy. And to say it in maybe more modern terms, Jesus was not Switzerland. Jesus was not Marge Simpson. Jesus was not Ross from Friends. Jesus was not Jerry Seinfeld. Okay? And I say it like this. I quoted Jesus myself. Jesus said, "I'm not a hippie." Jesus is not a hippie. Okay? Not a hippie. He was clear through some of the verses that we looked at last week that because of his existence, because of what he would do on the earth and what he would say in accordance with those deeds, that there would be turbulence and people would see him as a threat and there would be tension because of what he brought into the world. And if you're a Christian, it only makes sense that you might think that maybe you too would have some sort of a threatening nature toward the world. Not in a heinous way, not in a mean way, but that the world would perceive that there's something that you bring to the table that is a threat to the way that things are. That there's something about you, a nature inside you, that makes you a danger to the way that things have been. And even if you're not so sure what you think about Jesus, I'm still glad that you're here, because the cool thing is what we're going to do is we're going to look back at sort of ground zero when Jesus came to the earth and started doing his ministry throughout this series. We're going to look at kind of ground zero, and we're going to look afresh at some of the things that he did and said and represented as though they were just kind of happening now for the first time. And so maybe that'll help you think a little bit, help you process what you believe about this Jesus guy. And this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to look at threat number one. Threat number one, Jesus raised the bar on religion. He absolutely raised the bar on the religion. Now, I don't know if you have this experience. Maybe you were minding your own business at some point in your life, and somebody just kind of crept up on you and raised the standard. Do you know what I'm talking about? Maybe you were going to college, and you came back in the fall, and all of a sudden you need 3 more credits than you were supposed to need if you'd done it last year. Or maybe you were maybe you were in high school or something, and you showed up with your work, and then it turns out, oh no, you needed to do something more this year. You have to do this extra class, or maybe you went to the DMV on your lunch break, and all the other times you ever went to the DMV with the stuff that you have in your hands, it was all you needed, but all of a sudden now the requirements have changed, and you need to bring something more. You need to provide something more than you ever did before. Nobody likes it when that happens. Nobody likes it when that happens. It's irritating. It was good enough before. Why isn't it good enough now? That's exactly what Jesus did with religion. He took the most personal thing imaginable, a person's relationship with God, and he grasped it, and he grabbed a hold of it, and he claimed ownership of it, and he said, "Look, guys, you're missing it. You're missing it. There's something more that you need that you do not have, and you must have it. You must have it." Threat number one. Now, if you were Jewish, which almost everybody that Jesus talked to in his ministry was Jewish. He did talk to non-Jewish people at times, but most of his ministry was to Jewish people. If you were Jewish, this would be so extra irritating. So extra irritating, because if you were Jewish, you had so many things built into your life that proved to you that you had it all squared away with God. No race in history had more history with God himself than the Jewish people. Nobody had more of a direct relationship. Nobody had more written commands and rules and regulations. Nobody had more in their life focused on God and their relationship with God than these Jewish people that Jesus came to minister to. And yet he said, even to them, you don't have quite enough. You don't have all of what you need. You thought you had what you needed, but I'm telling you there's something more that you don't have yet. And I'm going to show you how to get it. I'm going to take you to the Gospel of John this morning, John chapter 13, if you've got a Bible with you or got it on your phone. Flip to John 13, 34 this morning. We're going to catch Jesus as he is bringing something new to his disciples. And the interesting part is he's bringing something new to them. He's saying, I'm bringing something new to you, but it's at the last moments of his life as they knew it. See, Jesus knew his end was coming. He knew he was going to be arrested. He knew he was going to be tormented. He knew he was going to be crucified. And so he took special time, his last time with his disciples, his students, so to speak, and he was having dinner with them, and he was spending this extended evening with them, and later on he'd ask them to go pray with him before he was arrested. And he's spending this time with them trying to prepare them, and this is wild. He says, in the middle of this, his last time with them, he says, a new command I give you. A new command I give you. And what new means, not just that it's never been around before, but it's something that's been hidden for a long time and is just now being uncovered. Just now being discovered as though it is brand new to you. Something extraordinary, something beyond what anybody is doing or practicing. A new command I give you. He says this, love one another. What? Did Jesus just like, kind of come to the end of his ministry and then just kind of like run out of material? You know what I mean? Like, what? Oh, yeah, we heard that one before. Love, that's good, right? But listen to what he says. It's a new thing, something that has been hidden until now to people. How could that be new? How could that be new? Come on, ask yourself, how could that be new? Come on, love one another? That's the best material you've got? Come on. What? But what you need to understand is that if they were to actually do that, that would be extraordinary. Because up until that point, okay, having a relationship with God mostly revolved around this one letter, I. Up until this point, your relationship with God mostly just circled all around this one letter, I, me. And there were lots of rules and there were lots of commands and lots of regulations that had been developed over time and very, very, very specific details and layers and a real thicket. And the primary question that the average person asked before they made any kind of decision, any kind of life choice, was this. Is it a sin if I fill in the blank? Is it a sin if I do this thing that I've been thinking about? It's a simple question, but I just want to know, if I choose to do the thing I've been thinking about doing, is it going to be a sin or is it going to not be a sin? That's all I really care about. Is God going to be happy or is he going to be mad? And the perception was that God was sitting up in heaven somewhere in an armchair and that he had a list in front of him of the things that he liked and the things that he didn't like, and he's keeping a tally on every single person. And hopefully, if you play your cards right, you'll at the end of your life have more things on the good side than on the bad. Should I commit adultery? Well, is it a sin? Is it not a sin? Should I tell a lie? Is it a sin? Is it not a sin? Should I take something that doesn't really belong to me? Is it a sin? Is it not a sin? Should I give 10%? Is it a sin? Is it not a sin to give or not give 10%? That's how people thought. That's how people thought about everything. It's a very base question. But is God going to be happy or mad with me if I do this? Is it going to be okay? Am I going to get away with it? Is it bad or is it good for me? And in one line, Jesus does something really mess people up. For the first time, for most people, he brings another person, another someone into the relationship with I and God. Other people. He brings in other people. Nobody did this before. Nobody did this before. The reason you and I did anything or not did anything was because we stopped and said, is this a sin or is this not a sin? But now he's bringing in other people into this relationship. It's really going to mess somebody up. And yeah, other people have always been sort of involved. I mean, you know, we read commands and rules from God that reference other people. You know, don't do this to somebody. Do that for somebody. Don't do this to somebody. Do that for somebody. But this is really the first time that God has made religion about somebody else. For the first time, he gives you a new question. A new question. And the question is no longer, is it a sin or is it not a sin? I got a new question for you. Here it is. Is it what's best for other people? Is it what's best for other people? What? What? You should do that right now. You should. What? What? Other, wait, why are we bringing other people into this again? Why are we doing that? What's best for other people? And just in case, you're a little unclear about what it would look like to love other people. Why do we bring these other people in here? We had such a good thing going. Why do we have to bring them in to this? We don't need to do that, do we? He says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. In other words, as I have been doing it, as you have seen me do, so you must now do to all the everybody, the one anothering of one another. That's what I want you to do. What you've seen me do, I want you to do to the you that's sitting next to you. I've been modeling it for you this whole time. You know, all those times when you just weren't getting it, you needed me to be patient, and what did I do? I was patient. All those times when you needed a whole lot of grace, what did I do? I offered it to you. What did you do? What did you do when you were not trusting me or not trusting God? You're just kind of being faithless. You're kind of being kind of lame. What did I do during that time? I stayed steadfast. I walked you through it. I gave you example after example. I encouraged you. Why? Because you needed it. When you kept getting it wrong, I bore that out with you. When you needed to be confronted about something important with regards to your future, what did I do? I was there every time with grace and truth. Even when I needed a rest, I took some rest. Why? So I could keep going with you for you. See, everything I have been doing on this earth since I have been with you has been really about what you need. Every time I'm faced with a decision to make, I ask the question, is it what is best for them? Is it what they need? That's the focus of my existence. He says it again later on in the night. My command is this. This is John 15, by the way. John 15, 12. My command is this. Love each other as I have loved you. It's the same thing again. Love each other as I have loved you. But just in case you're wondering how far you have to take that, how far that's meant to go. Love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. See, we're all human, right? We got any non-humans in here? No, I didn't think so. Our very nature, when someone gives us something demanding in front of us to do, is to say, well, how far do we have to go with that? I mean, I understand a certain amount, but what's reasonable here? You know, when is it reasonable to step out and say, that's too much? If you have that question, how far do I go? His answer is, all the way. There's no end to it. There's no end to it. See, the love of other people is always the appropriate response. And there's no cap. No limit set, no ceiling. As much as it takes is the answer to your question. As much as is needed is the question. The answer to your question. And the thing is, that is so simple. It is so, so simple. In one strike, Jesus has taken the most complicated thing known to man, religion, and he has made it crystal clear. He's made it so impeccably, perfectly crystal clear. What do I require of you, human? What do I require of you? This is my command. This is my overarching theme for your life. This is the commitment I looked for you, from you. Will you love one another? Will you make that your epicenter? Will you make that the fulcrum of your life? That singular question from now on, is it what's best for other people? Is it what's best for the everybody's? It's so simple. It's so simple. And here's the thing. There's a piece of every single person that hates that. That hates it. And I want to tell you why. It's a little perspective on yourself. Because at the end of the day, if instead of asking, is it a sin or is it not a sin? Which is really kind of a low question, isn't it? It's kind of a low question. If instead of doing that, you ask yourself every challenging situation, what is really best for the other guys? What's best for them? Here's the thing. Most of the time, you know exactly what the answer is. You know exactly what the answer is. Oh, sure, sometimes it's challenging. You know, sometimes it seems a little bit tricky. But even in those times, you just get a little outside perspective, a little help from other people, and they just point it right out. What would be best in this situation for the other peoples, the other bodies in my life? The other bodies. Remember that phrase, the other bodies. I just made it up. It's a real thing. The other bodies. What's best for the other bodies? You actually know most of the time, don't you? In here somewhere, however you think about that, you actually know the answer. It's when we go back to the old way of thinking and say, is it a sin or is it not a sin? I've got an idea about what I'd like to do, and I'm looking for a way to make that okay. Is there a loophole somewhere? See, there's no loophole in is it what's best for other people. No loophole in that. There's really just like one answer to that. And we don't like the idea of being, you know, kind of constrained and pigeonholed. But the reality is there's really just one answer if that's your heart. You won't get it perfectly, but you're pretty close. You know pretty close what it is. You see, the world that you and I are a part of, the world actually secretly wants religion to be complicated. There's a part of us all that wants it to be complex. Because when it's complex and there are multiple layers and facets and cloudiness and when God is a little bit hazy, you see, we can talk ourselves into doing the thing that we prefer, the thing that we would like to do for us, for you, for me. When it's complicated, we can get away with just about anything. But in one line, Jesus comes and says, oh no, nothing complicated anymore. Nothing complicated anymore. I want to make it so crystal clear for you. Friends. And he finishes that little bit with this. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends, which he is about to demonstrate. And then he says this, you are my friends if you do what I command. You are my friends. You and I are good. You and I, like this. I know, deep down in your heart, I know you want to be close to God. I know you want to be confident in your eternal future. I know you want to be right. I know you want this relationship. I know. And so I make it crystal clear for you. I make it so simple. Do this one thing. This is the one response. This is the one response I look for from you. Will you commit to this question as the center of your life? Will you love people the way that I have loved you? See, you need something from me that you can't do for yourself. I'm about to do that thing for you. I'm about to make that relationship possible again. And this is the one thing I look for from you. Will you take this command to heart? Will you make your life about this thing? Will you commit to this? That is the difference between the fans and the followers. That to me is the difference. You may go to the front of a room and make a prayer at some point, and you may have people tell you, oh, you're doing very well. You're doing great. You do all these good things. You may have all kinds of, they call them sycophants, okay? People that are very, very, you're right all the time. Everything you do is gold. But at the end of the day, what impresses me, Jesus, will you commit to this question as the center of your life? See, as it turns out, that was actually God's intention from the very beginning. So those of you who know the history of the Bible and you know Genesis and you've heard the creation story, what was the first problem? What was the first problem? First, there was no trust. And then the second problem was there was no love. First, there was no trust. Adam and Eve couldn't take God's word for it. And then right after that, somebody killed somebody else. That was the beginning. And ever since, we have all these commands. You go back in your Bible and read them. Look at Exodus and look at Leviticus. Well, don't read Leviticus maybe, but Deuteronomy. Yeah, I know. But there's some good stuff in there, actually. But go back and imagine this, that every command God gave was meant to help us love people. Why not commit adultery? Because God's sitting up in a chair somewhere and he just doesn't like it. He's made a list. No, because it hurts people. Why wait for marriage? Because you don't want to be somebody's regret someday. Why tell the truth? Because when you don't tell the truth, you're putting your own future ahead of somebody else's future. You're treating yourself as more valuable than somebody else. You're not caring about that person. Why not take the Lord's name in vain? I mean, I think of the hardest one to think of. I think that would be the hardest. Why not? The Lord's name in vain. That seems just very direct. Maybe it's because, in part, because you're you're teaching other people to think of God as casual and nothing special and nothing important. Maybe that's part of the deal. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think that maybe everything that God labeled as sinful, as rebellious, there is a reason behind it? Because every single little person, big or small, color of any kind, was intended to be a child of the same Father. And when we do those things, and we had to make a list. We had to make a list because we just couldn't think about people in terms of love. He had to make a list of the things. Do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. An awful lot of it. Maybe not every last line and dot in P and Q, but an awful lot of it seems to be to protect other people from this guy and all his selfishness. Jesus says, I give you something new. Something that has been hidden for a very long time, but is just now being uncovered again. That God's priority is not just you. It's everybody. It's everybody. All the other bodies. I want you to think about the last hard decision that you had to make. You got one? Has it been a while since you had to make a really tough decision? The tough decisions are tough. Why? Because they take a lot of time, right? You keep going, you wee-wah, you hem and you haw, you go back and forth. Oh, I don't know. Is this good? Is this not good? You know, what's God going to think about this if I do this thing? What's he going to? I don't know. Think about it. Was it a financial decision? Was it a relationship decision, a spouse decision? Was it a workplace decision? Was it a school thing? What was it? Was it how you're going to react to somebody's bad behavior? Response to some kind of a challenge that somebody put at your feet? What made it so complicated? What made it so complicated? What I want to do this morning is just invite you to look back for a second and ask this question as though you're just looking at it for the first time. What's really best for the other people? What's really best? And maybe, just maybe, it's a little too easy for us to go back to the old way of thinking. Isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it a little too easy? Even when we've been on the path a long time, even when we've been on it years, maybe decades, it never goes away. It's never a non-issue. That question is always lurking in the back of our minds when we have a decision to make, a behavior or a plan or an idea. It's always lurking there. Is it a sin or isn't it a sin? Is it a sin or isn't it a sin? Well, that's a good place to start, but it's not where you finish. You finish with love one another. As Jesus said so aptly in other places in the gospel, see, if you just knew how to do that, if you just set your mind on what's best for other people, everything else is going to fall into place. Because everything I've built for you has been pointed to that one thing. If you would just lock onto that one thing, you wouldn't need all the rules. You wouldn't need all the rules. I just want to challenge you today, but I want to do something else. I want to speak to you. You, and you know who you are, okay? The you I'm talking about is the you that has learned to think of a relationship with God as something very complicated. something complex, something that's going to take you years to get your grasp on, something that's just elusive. You look at it and like, oh my gosh, that is just so enormous, an idea that I could have a relationship with God. Or I used to have a relationship with God, but it was so taxing, and there were so many things to remember, and there were so many rules and regulations to keep track of. I want to talk to you for a moment. I want you to hear the Jesus that's written of in our accounts of the disciples. I want you to hear Jesus saying to you, listen, listen, hear me loud and clear. I have made this simple. Demanding, yes, more demanding than any other version of religion you've ever imagined. This is relational, but I have made it so simple for you. Look what I have done for you to make this accessible for you after all this time. Don't let all of the banter about this, that, and the other thing get in the way of hearing me loud and clear, my message to you. I have done this thing for you. I've laid down my life. And the one thing, the one question I ask is, will you commit to love as your way of life? Will you commit to this in faith to me? That's a question everybody has to answer. That's a question everybody has to answer. And like I said, there's something about that that every one of us, there's something that just, that's so demanding. That's too demanding. But there's something else in us. There's something else in us that says, dear God, yes, I just want to know for sure what you want. I just want to be sure. I want to be able to understand it. I just want you to be clear to me. Just spell it out. What do you want for me, for my life? And there's always a battle. There's always a battle in every heart. And it comes down to, which side will you let win? Which side do you choose to win? Now that was threat number one. There are more. There are more. Jesus did other stuff. But that was his number one crime. This week, making religion simple, raising the bar. Come back next week. We'll talk about number two. I'm just going to pray for you before we go.